So, what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Tired of the lack of conversation from your team because they're on social media or because of the fits from your toddler if you take away their devices. We'll talk about breaking screen addiction and bad habits with technology use and how these things have outright hijacked our children today. The author of the book Glow Kids will join me, and he is a leading expert, the nation's leading expert on the issue of technology addiction. So stay tuned. Dr. Nicholas Carderas will be joining me here on Trending. It's our weekly marriage hour today on Trending, and we're going to discuss in just a little bit also as we talk about screen use and the challenges posed for marriages, but specifically children today. This is important during our weekly marriage hour, and the reason being is that marriages have been significantly impacted by relationships, the lack of communication, the damaged relationships, and overall human flourishment that has been undermined in many ways by the way we use technology, from social media, cyberbullying, addictive, obsessive behaviors, how we view ourselves, everything from how we do or don't communicate with our spouses, but especially as we see an increase over the last couple of years in anxiety, depression, suicidality. These are very, very important issues that do impact marriage, which is why we're going to discuss this today during our marriage hour. We'll also dive into the topic of in-law relationships. I by no means have this figured out. I've only been married a couple years. And let's be real, I don't think anyone fully has figured out how to navigate in-law relationships well. But I've had a lot of questions surrounding this come up over the last few months with the increased frequency and time together from Thanksgiving to Christmas parties and New Year's. And so I think that there's some incredibly sage wisdom coming from sacred scripture and even from the sacrament of matrimony itself that can inform and form our relationships when it comes to our in-laws and how we look at certain dynamics, and also some great practical tips that are out there and available for navigating what can be very difficult relationships, depending on how we're willing to look at them. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. If you have a question today, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 1-888-914-9149. So many comments have come up recently where I've heard people talking about concern surrounding their children, now grown adults, not being willing to have kids and saying they're closing up shop for forever before things even get started. There's also been recent criticism, and we'll talk about this tomorrow here on Trending, about choosing to have a pet over a child. In fact, I saw something, I have to read it still, where Pope Francis actually gave some criticism surrounding the issue of people choosing to have pets instead of kids. So I think it's a fascinating topic. We'll discuss that tomorrow here on Trending, but I'd love to hear from you in the meantime. The number's 1-888-914-9149. You can actually share your thoughts on this topic and we'll take it up tomorrow. You can always comment on my social media as well. If you're not already following, you can go and direct message me at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. I'd love to hear your thoughts. But let's just talk for a moment here about this topic surrounding screen addiction, technology confusion. On average, we're seeing that actually the reality is that many teenagers aren't just spending an hour or 2 hours on technology. They're spending the upwards of 7 and 8 hours or more a day on technology. Tweens, we're seeing levels right around 6 hours, and we actually see a huge number of hours coming even from the younger, tiny toddler and up kids. We've all seen it, judgmental or non-judgmental, your kids, other people's kids, where I even see, for example, where someone's on a jog with their kid in the stroller, and I'm thinking 10 out of 10, you're getting your kid outside, but then the kid is there looking at the screen the whole time, totally missing the grass and the sunshine and all the beautiful things around him. He has that canopy of his stroller covering him because, of course, he needs to be able to see the screen. Otherwise, there's going to be an impact on being able to see the screen with the glow. So joining me today to discuss all of this and to talk about breaking bad habits with technology use and specifically screen addiction that has hijacked perhaps your kid or someone else's, or let's be real, this is relevant to us adults as well. We're going to be joined by Dr. Nicholas Carderas. He is the country's foremost technology addiction expert. He's an Ivy League educated psychologist. He's taught neuropsychology at the doctoral level, and as I mentioned before, he's the author of the book called Glow Kids that came out about 5 years ago. I follow the work and have cited his work regularly here on Trending, and it's about time we're finally having a conversation to provide you with resources to help overcome this crisis of screen time that so many people have struggled with. The part of the title of his book is How Screen Addiction is Hijacking Our Kids and How to Break the Trans. So joining me now is Dr. Nicholas Carderas to break this trans of screen addiction. Welcome to Trending.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. Pleasure to be here.
I've admired your work, as I mentioned, for a number of years now, and have cited it, but I thought it's about time we just dove deeper into this growing problem that, even in face of everything that's happened over the last couple of years with COVID, isn't going away. I think some people thought some of the challenges, the addictions, the attention deficit disorder, the suicidality, anxiety, and depression that at times has been a result of technology use. They thought that, you know, it would just be a fad. It doesn't seem to be going anywhere. I think if anything, technology will continue to be a greater part of our lives. And so that means we have to moderate it. Can you share with us a little bit of the problem so people have a really clear perspective of why something needs to be done with technology use for kids?
Yeah, and thank you. And you're exactly right. It's not going anywhere. And it's on the trajectory on our technology usage, and I like to use the word immersion because we're immersed in technology. We don't just use it, it uses us. As Thoreau used to say, we've become the tool of our tools. So similarly, we've become the tools of our own gadgets, and we're mad for our devices, and our devices are driving us mad. And when you look at mental health metrics over the last 10 to 15 years, because this is sort of almost the bigger takeaway than when I wrote Glow Kids 6 years ago, and I was pointing out that we can become addicted to our devices, that was sort of a new idea at the time. And people pushed back on it. People said, you know, really, can we become habituated or addicted to devices? And now that's been established, and the World Health Organization has it as an official clinical diagnosis. But the bigger question is, tech addiction is just the price of admission. What is our intersection with technology doing to us in a more broad way, to our mental health, to our society? Because what we've seen, I was mentioning before, mental health metrics, we have the worst psychiatric mental health metrics in the history of psychiatric measurement. And this is before COVID. This is pre-COVID. In 2019, we had the worst suicide rates, anxiety rates, addiction rates, overdose rates, depression rates, ADHD rates. Everything was at an all-time high. And then COVID was just kerosene on that fire, because what did COVID do? In addition to being this horrific viral pandemic, it created what I call a shadow pandemic of a mental health pandemic, because it exacerbated our technology dependence. So now, if screen time equals more depression, COVID equaled, you know, so here's the statistic. During COVID, our screen time doubled and our depression tripled.
Wow.
So it's not going away, and it's just making us worse. Yeah, screen time doubled and depression tripled. And then we saw suicide rates spike, and you know, we've had Zoom schooling and all those other issues, which have been a disaster. But COVID was essentially almost a beta test, an experiment where we've really seen what happens if we really ramp up our technology dependence. And what we've seen is because I'm working on a new book right now that I just submitted to my publisher, and it's called Digital Madness. And essentially the premise is, we just weren't evolutionarily designed or developed to be such high-tech immersed creatures. We weren't meant to be sedentary, isolated, screen staring, meaning devoid. The screen sucks our creativity and sense of purpose and meaning away. It isolates us. It makes us obese and All the things that are not good for human beings is what technology has done to us in the blink of an eye.
You know, it's fascinating you mentioned that because my perspective often when it comes to technology really stems from my childhood. You know, I grew up where I think the iPhone came out when I was in high school. And, you know, I had a cell phone, I think, when I was the age of 12 years old. I remember, you know, struggling with some anxiety and a little bit of depression right around middle school and, you know, using the excuse that I was having a hard time sleeping at night. And I would stay up watching on repeat every single night, picking up where I left off before the A&E version of Pride and Prejudice. Well, did it help me fall asleep? No, I started taking melatonin. And, you know, I look back now at how these were just on a lot of the technology was just starting to be a part of our story. You know, I might stay up on AIM. You remember the AOL instant messaging late at night on the weekends, messaging my cousins, older cousins who had it because I was pretty young to have it. You know, I think of all of these memories. It's radically different today. And I think sometimes it's hard to separate that out. But when we see some of the problems and challenges, at the same time, you know, I grew up in the mountains. I grew up outdoors, total tomboy, and I have always been keenly aware that if I'm on my computer or on a cell phone for too long, I get angry, I get grumpy. I'm more aware of that, and I tend to go, you know, let me just lock this thing away. Well, a kid can't necessarily regulate that, and a lot of kids to begin with don't necessarily have that feeling experience of having been outdoors for a long period of time, saying, hey, I feel great when I'm out and about. And I kind of start to get grumpy and not feel good when I've been on my technology for a while. And so it kind of brings me to how you first started to come across this issue with video gaming, which was kind of at the forefront before kind of the cell phone addiction itself even became a problem with text messaging and social media. Can you share a little bit about that?
Well, are you talking about when I was traveling in Greece and saw the basement-dwelling gamers, or when I had a young man that was referred to me that was having a video game-induced psychotic break?
Please share both stories, because I think they're eye-opening for many people.
Yeah, it was early on. This was, God, I don't even remember what year this was now, but I was traveling in a pretty remote island part of Greece. It was only accessible by an eight-hour hike. It was the Greek equivalent of the Grand Canyon. Yet, hike down the Cimmerian Gorge and Crete and get to this remote village, which opened up to this really breathtaking vista of nature overlooking the Mediterranean. And it was like a paradise. And all the native Greek children were splashing around and kayaking and, you know, being kids. And I remember I had to go to this cafe to get a cup of coffee, but to also use the restroom. And the restroom was in this downstairs basement, dank, low-ceilinged storage room, essentially. And there were these two overweight little Greek-American kids who were there on vacation, and they were in front of an Apple computer, and they were playing video games. And this was like, this had to be like 2007, I think. And it was noon. It was the middle of the day. And at first, I thought it was just odd that these two kids were sitting in the shadows on this gorgeous day and this breathtaking part of the world. And I thought maybe they were just doing it for that day. But every time I went back there over the course of those next couple of weeks, these kids were just there the whole time. And I remembered scratching my head and thinking, this is odd. Why aren't these kids outside playing? Like, I, like you, was raised outdoors and playing and, you know, doing the things that kids are meant to do as they're growing up.
Right. And they don't know what they're missing.
I'm sorry?
They don't know what they're missing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They don't have a comparison point, right? So they don't have a perspective of what they're missing. And so that was kind of my first red flag. And then the more significant psychiatric red flag was a few years later. This was about 10 years ago when I had a young man that was referred to me that had been playing World of Warcraft for multiple hours, you know, 10 hours or so a day in an evening and for several weeks. And he essentially was lost in the Matrix. He didn't know where the game ended and where reality began, and was sent to me in at that time, it looked like a substance-induced psychosis. Sometimes, you know, we'll have psychosis when people are doing crystal meth or angel dust. And he didn't know where he was. And eventually he asked me, are we still in the game? And,
wow.
And that's when I realized, wow, this guy's full-blown Matrix. And this young man was 14. He was a freshman in high school. And he didn't have a psychiatric history. He had just been in the game world for too long. And, you know, and the point that that struck for me was that we, the adults in the room, were asleep at the switch because of one main fundamental, I think, fatal flaw that we've all done, or at least my generation has done, with technology. We conflated modern technology with television. We thought these were just smaller, more portable TVs, gaming platforms, social media, the smartphones. These were just small screens. And most of us who grew up on television weren't threatened by that. We didn't think that they would be as psychiatrically problematic as they've been. And what we were missing was that the immersive and interactive nature of these screens make them qualitatively different than just watching a TV. Like when I was in high school growing up and I was watching, Starsky and Hutch in the 1970s or 80s, you sat on a couch and you watched the television and you were a passive viewer of a visual experience. Now you're in the visual experience. You're a participant in that experience. And that just makes it a lot more powerful. So I don't think most adults didn't realize that effect.
Right. The interactive, and I think it is so important because people are not recognizing, you know, they make fun of at times how people were terrified. Oh, you know, don't sit too close to the TV. You know, people have made the joke, you fall into the TV. Or I remember as a kid, I wasn't allowed to sit too close because it was just bad for your eyes. And now here we are, you know, all of us, parents, us included, with iPads, you know, inches from our nose, even closer if you have bad eyesight.
And worse, Zuckerberg wants to put us with, you know, the metaverse with glasses that are going to be, you know, internet. He wants us to live in the internet with immersive augmented reality glasses. So it's in our minds. It's crazy what he's proposing, and it's insane, and we need to push back against that, but don't get me started.
Oh, that's a whole nother conversation. We're going to have you back to talk about the metaverse, because we love to talk about the idea of transhumanism and kind of what's the end goal, you know, what's the plan? Mm-hmm. How does this impact us in terms of how we relate to one another as people? So we will have to table that, because I'm so, so encouraged to go down that rabbit hole right now, because it's very important to discuss the metaverse. Mm-hmm. But let's talk for just a moment. When you actually worked with that patient who you refer to as by the name of Dan, where he came in, he asked if he was still in the game. He was 14 years old, really struggling. I know he ended up actually needing emergency care, and he came back to you seeking help.
He was psych hospitalized for about 30 days.
Wow. Can you share a little bit of his desire for help after, and especially his mom's reaction that I think touches on the crisis that many parents face when it comes to their desire for their kids to use technology?
Yeah. And first of all, the problem was that he wasn't genuinely psychotic because there was one other intersecting variable that amplifies these issues and makes them worse is sleep deprivation. And so if you're sleep deprived and then you intersect that, or you drop yourself into a really immersive type of reality, really funky things can happen to your, you know, to us as people. You know, really bad things happen when you're sleep deprived. And one of the things that technology does is it's so arousing, because at the end of the day, all of our devices are stimulants. They raise our dopamine levels and they raise our adrenaline levels. So they really act like five cups of Starbucks coffee would. They act as stimulants. Yet paradoxically, they're also sedating because they're hypnotics. So in a certain way, they have a little bit of, let's call it a high octane digital cocaine while they're sedatives. So it's almost like you're taking a sedative and the stimulant at the same time. But that high octane effect, that stimulating effect, this young man who had been sleep deprived, hadn't slept for a few days, if he would have just unplugged from his games and not played for 3 or 4 days, he didn't really need to go to the psych hospital, but that was how that unfolded. And, you know, once you're talking to characters in a video game, you present like a psychiatric patient. And because unfortunately they put him on certain antipsychotic medications, which really weren't appropriate for him at the time. But to your point, the reaction of his mother was, she was most upset of the fact that when he came back to me, he was so frightened by the whole experience. He wanted off of his games, and he wanted me to help him get rid of his games. Essentially, he wanted me to help kind of talk him down into how to get rid of his games and how to be gaming free. And I encouraged him to just throw them in the trash and start going outside and start playing basketball again. And his mother who I thought was calling me to thank me at the time, was calling me to give me an earful. First of all, it was financial. Do you know how much those games cost that you encouraged him to throw away? And then second of all, it was now he actually wants to go outside and play. And heaven forbid, and I was like shocked. I was genuinely shocked at the time that the reaction of a parent was going to be such a level of upset that their son wanted to go outdoors to play. You know, to be fair, in a little bit of defense of that parent or some other parents, some of our kids live in pretty tough neighborhoods. Some of our kids do live in pretty dangerous neighborhoods. And I can see how for some families, outside can represent danger for some. And so there is that. That is a reality. But that fear of the outside was amplified, and I talk about this when I do lectures around the country. I talk about the fearful parent, the helicopter parent, really was born in 1980 with the development of CNN and the 24/7 news cycle and 24/7 cable news really created the sort of, talk about a moral panic or a fear model. Yeah. You know, it was every missing kid was mm-hmm. broadcast for hour after hour, where before that we used to have the news for half an hour a night, and that was it. And now you had parents that were really terrified about everything that could happen to their children. And when the reality is that this is the safest time, by FBI statistics, this is the safest time there is to be a child. They're not boogeyman or child abductions. There were much worse things happening to kids in terms of abductions and bad things happening in the early part of the 20th century than there were in the last 20 years, but you wouldn't know that if you watched cable news. And that's what most of our parents are watching. And so they're terrified. They're afraid to let their kids be kids.
And so the attitude is, like, keep my kid at home. At least we know they're home. They're safe. They're not that's outside. Right. We know who they're with. We actually get to know their friends that they're with. Or maybe they're not even with friends. Instead, they're just using, you know, these means of how they game together digitally with their headsets and talk to one another. I understand the perspective, but I want to come back with you and discuss some of the research discussing how really this is what you refer to as digital heroin, how it's dulling for the mind. It's leading to ADHD, suicidality, depression, anxiety, all of this. And how in the name of it's a learning game or a learning TV show that we've been duped into using these screens, and it's doing harm, not good, for our kids. We'll be back here in just a minute with Dr. Nicholas Carderas, a leading expert on screen addiction here in the United States. Solidarity HealthShare now offers a new program called Solidarity One. With Solidarity One, members decide what healthcare options best fit their needs and with the flexibility to meet any budget. Learn more at CatholicHealthShare.com.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Are you sick and tired of the lack of conversation from their teenager because they're looking at their screen, or fits from your toddler if you take away their iPad? You're joining me during our weekly marriage hour here on Trending, and we're talking about a topic that heavily influences marriages, relationships, and especially your kids. The leading expert here in the United States on technology addiction, Dr. Nicholas Carderas, is joining me, and he's the author of the book Glow Kids, How Screen Addiction is Hijacking Our Kids and How to Break the Trance. The book came out, about 5 years ago already. I've loved his work since it first came out. I've followed it. We've talked about it here on Trending, but for the first time, we're finally having Dr. Nicholas Carderas here on Trending with us. We've been talking about some of the problems surrounding screen addiction, and if you want to call it even just bad habits, because I think a lot of parents don't want to think that their kid's addicted to a screen. So maybe just replace that word with bad habits of screens and then kind of hear out what we're discussing. But I want to discuss now a lot of the research surrounding screens and what you specifically refer to, Dr. Carderas, as digital heroin. Can you explain this phrase?
Right. So addiction comes in two different categories. There is substance-based addictions, which are alcohol and the ones that most of us are familiar with substances or pills or different stimulants. And then there's also behavioral addictions, which can be things like gambling and sex and things that don't necessarily involve a substance, but involve a compulsion towards engaging a behavior in a repetitive, what we would call maladaptive way. So it's this idea that even behavioral addictions affect the brain in the same way or activate the addictive part of the brain in the same way that a substance addiction does. So it's called the dopamine reward loop, or the more technical term is the mesolimbic dopamine reward loop. And essentially what happens is certain substances or certain behaviors light up our dopamine. Dopamine feels good. It's a feel-good neurotransmitter that evolutionarily was designed to incentivize us to do things like eat food, because eating food releases dopamine because it feels good, and to procreate, because that also has some dopamine release to it. But that things like cocaine and gaming hijack the dopamine response, because now they release pretty high levels of dopamine and they don't serve any practical or evolutionary benefit. So when we started looking at MRIs and more fMRI research studies started coming out, when they started looking at the brains of people on the internet, gaming specifically, most of the fMRI initial studies that came out were on gamers, and they found that it was affecting the brain of a gamer in the exact same way as a cocaine or a heroin addict. And that also has to do, and there's a double whammy that happens here too, because not only does this dopamine chase happen where you experience this dopamine response and then you want to repeat the experience, but we know that our brains evolve over time, and the younger we are, the frontal cortex isn't as fully developed, and the frontal cortex is that part of our brain behind our forehead that is called the executive functioning part of our brain. It regulates things like impulsivity, our ability to moderate things. It's a part of our brain that we say consequential thinking happens. So that doesn't develop till we're in our 20s. So that's why kids are more impulsive, right? The 10-year-old doesn't have the same ability to consequentially think, if I do this, then that will happen. They don't think about the consequences because they're not neurophysiologically equipped to think about the consequences because their brain hasn't developed to that level yet. The double whammy with any addiction, both substance and digital, is that it compromises frontal cortex growth. And what they found in these fMRI studies were that, so let me back up. When they've looked at the brains of chronic drug addicts, they saw that the frontal cortex over time shrinks and atrophies. And a shrunken and atrophied frontal cortex makes a person more impulsive and less able to control their behavior. So a drug addict is less able to control his addiction because of this compromised, damaged frontal cortex. Well, they found in fMRI research that the same thing happens to the frontal cortex of young adults and kids who are on games. Their frontal cortex begins to shrink and atrophy. So these kids now become more impulsive. And now they're less able to moderate whether they're on a screen or not, because the part of their brain that needs to be developing to give them the ability to just say no, you know, to quote Nancy Reagan, doesn't develop. And so these kids now are compromised and lifelong impulsively wired. They're wired for impulsivity in ADHD if they get on the screen at age, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6, or 10, because these are the formative developmental brain years.
And when you're saying wired, you're saying for a lifetime. If there's damage being done to that frontal cortex, as you're saying, being shrunken, atrophied, we're talking about the comparison of someone who has been on drugs versus not been on drugs. Their capacity to reason and function and have interpersonal relationships and dynamics. It's fascinating. I actually have kind of a side question. We're seeing this rise in a lot of adults being diagnosed as being on the spectrum, which I found fascinating. A number of people 20, 30 years into their marriages have been sharing recent diagnoses. Could this have anything to do, and I know this is a side conversation, anything to do with perhaps having grown up having played video games and a damage to just the capacity to relate to one another because of
gaming? Yeah, there's a thing called mirror neurons, and mirror neurons are the parts of our brain that allow us to experience empathy and compassion. And those also develop over time. And those require socialization to happen. And so if you drop a kid and you deprive them of appropriate socialization, their mirror neurons don't appropriately develop. And that begins, you know, because that is one of the typifiers of autism, is this sort of lack of human connection and empathy. I can tell you that my friend and colleague, Victoria Dunkley, who wrote the book, How to Reset Your Child's Brain, she's an adolescent psychiatrist out of Los Angeles. She won't diagnose or treat anyone until they've done a digital detox for 4 to 6 weeks. And what she says is, when she has kids and teenagers who come to her, whether they're coming to her because they have a mood disorder like depression, or they have a personality disorder, or, she says, a spectrum disorder, up to 70% of the time she notices either all the symptoms go away or benefit when you remove the screen time. She thinks, and there's some additional research that does seem to correlate, that screen time may exacerbate underlying autism, or can even, and this is speculative, but it seems to be pointing that it could even be causing some of these increases in autism spectrum disorders.
Fascinating. I knew there had to have been a link, because it's been so odd that so many people of my peer group and just a little bit older have suddenly come out with being placed on the spectrum, and it wasn't making sense. And I kept thinking, could video games, could our technology use be part of this? So
I think your intuition was spot on. I think your intuition is accurate.
Okay, let's keep diving into more of the research on the impact of games. And we're going to get to the solutions, especially if you're a parent listening who's saying, okay, well, what do I do? How do I get the screen out of my teenager's hand and not make them a total social outcast? And how do I take it away from my toddler without enduring screaming fits, which will happen, but there's a transition. So let's just speak briefly to some of the common objections that we hear, where people will say, well, my kid will be behind if they don't use technology early, or it's for learning purposes, and this is why they allow the constant use of technology in the classroom as well as at home.
I hate that Kool-Aid that everyone's drank, because I do a lot of speaking at education conferences, and everybody from school superintendents to administrators and educators, ask them to show you the one study. Ask them to show you one study that correlates screen time with efficacy and educational outcomes. There's not one study that shows that a kid in front of a screen has better educational outcomes. In fact, the research shows the opposite. The more screens in the classroom, the poorer the outcomes. And in fact, if you go larger, if you go internationally, the countries with the lowest screen time, Finland always is at the top of educational outcomes. They have the least amount of screen time in the classroom. So it's a bit of Kool-Aid that was given by the big tech companies to school administrators who didn't want to be behind, right? Because school district X doesn't want to be behind school district Y. If they all got tablets and Chromebooks in eighth grade, they've got to give them to their sixth graders. And if sixth graders get them, then we've got to give them to our fourth graders. And it's the same keeping up with the Joneses mindset that we as parents have, because we feel like, well, we're in the digital age. We don't want our kids to be behind. And I hear that all the time. And it's a false narrative, because all you have to tell your listeners or anybody that I speak to is, not only do the big tech executives and founders and the people who know the most about big tech tend to put their kids in non-tech schools like Waldorf and Montessori schools. So what does that tell you if the Silicon Valley crowd is putting their children in the Los Altos Waldorf school, which a large percentage of them do? But the other thing to realize is that Sergey Brin and Larry Page, who were the, you know, the Google boys, they were Montessori students. Jeff Bezos was a Montessori student. Bill Gates didn't use a computer before he was 13. The most innovative minds in technology didn't have technology shoved down their throats when they were 2 and 3 years old, because we know that technology delays your cognition. There was a research that was just published in 2019 in the Journal of American Medical Association, the pediatrics version of it, and it showed the cognitive delays that happen with two-year-olds and screen time. So screens delay cognition. Screens delay development. Screens don't enhance, they delay. And this idea that little Johnny and Susie are going to be behind is just Kool-Aid by big tech to create cradle-to-grave consumers. If we want, and I have 14-year-old twin boys, by the way. I'm not just speaking from an ivory tower. I've got skin in the game because I've got children. If I want my children's brains to be as optimized and as naturally developed, the last thing I want them to do is to be zombified in front of a sedating screen for the first 5 or 10 years of their lives. I want them to be outside in nature using their hand-eye coordination because that's what helps neural development for children. The other thing that's the most important thing for children development is boredom. Boredom drives creativity. A kid who is bored has to play make-believe, and they have to use their active imagination to create their own imagery and that creates neurosynaptic pathways. If you sit a child in a chair and you drop a screen in front of their face, they're not using their imagination. Their imagination is being programmed for them. So those muscles, to use a pun, those neurosynaptic muscles never develop. Their creativity is being created for them. You know, the Marvel movie or the video game, the World of Warcraft, that's doing all the heavy lifting, not the kid's imagination. Mm-hmm. So you want your kid to thrive, let them go out in nature, let them observe the nuances of nature, and let them play make-believe, which they're forced to do when they get bored. This idea that we can't, you know, it's our fault. You know, we can't tolerate our kids being bored. So if we go in the car, we got to stick a screen in front of them for a long car ride because God forbid we have a conversation or we talk to our children.
Right. But, you know, I've seen so many little boys who they tend to be on technology far too much or are video gaming. And on rare occasion, maybe a family event or, you know, at a park, all of a sudden they are thrown a ball and expected to throw it and they don't throw it very well. They have no hand-eye coordination, which is disproportionate considering their age. And they become so angry. And I think, well, what do you expect? They haven't developed these hand-eye coordination skills from the time they were little. You know, and it just shocks me that there's just this level of frustration. I have a one-year-old. She's been loving throwing balls now for about 3 months. Does she do it greatly? No. But does she get angry? No. But, you know, see the response that we're seeing with little boys over these simple things that you just mentioned that are so important, hand-eye coordination and boredom, they need to be leading elements of part of kids' childhood today. So let's talk about some of these solutions. And if you're just joining us here on Trending, you're listening to Relevant Radio. Joining me now is Dr. Nicholas Carderas. He's the leading technology addiction expert here in our country, and he has written an incredible book I highly, highly recommend. It's called Glow Kids. We'll include a link on social media as well as in the podcast notes for today's show. You can subscribe at relevantradio.com/trending or wherever you catch your podcast if you'd like to listen to more of this episode or share it. So diving into the solutions, Dr. Carderas, okay, we're going to do two approaches. One, what to do if you've already given the technology. And then two, what do you do if you're starting from scratch with future children or recent kids? What are your recommendations? What are the solutions here?
So I'll start backwards. The starting from scratch recommendation is delay, delay, delay. As much as possible, delay giving the tablet, Chromebook, phone to your child. Give their brains and their developments a chance to flourish before you drop the tablet into the crib. I usually try to recommend age 10 if possible, ideally even age 12, before you give them an individual device. So, you know, a lot of schools have computer labs and kids will be exposed to learn how to use a computer. But, you know, being in a computer lab twice a week in middle school is different than having, a pocket rocket in your back pants. And so if you do have to give a phone, like what I did with my teenage boys, you know, there's a great company out now called the Gab Phone. And the Gab Phone is, you know, no kid who gets a phone wants to have an old flip phone because, you know, they'll get made fun of and not fit in with the crowd. But the Gab Phone looks like a smartphone and you can text and make calls with it and it looks sleek and you could have music on it, but it's not Wi-Fi compatible, so you can't have apps or gaming on it. So all the stuff that becomes like highly problematic or addictive or social media, you can't do on the Gab phone. So that's a good starter phone for kids. Fantastic. You know, I just got that for my boys. So the main thing is to delay technology as much as possible. I equate it with driving a car. You don't give a seven-year-old car keys. They have to be developmentally ready to drive the car. And it's the same way with technology. It's very powerful. So you don't just give it to any infant. If a child's already been, and again, some very wonderful, loving parents, I think most parents are trying to do what's best for their children. They didn't willingly or knowingly do something that was damaging for their children. And, you know, I've worked with hundreds of families who regret that they had unleashed the hounds of technology too soon on their kids. And it becomes a lot more challenging to undo that. So we start talking about trying to, you know, when you get to a certain severity of problem, there are some kids, you know, I've worked with some failure to launch, you know, kids who went away to college and just flunked out. They couldn't leave the dorm room. They were, you know, peeing in jars because they wouldn't go to the bathroom because they were just so glued to their screens that they wouldn't, they couldn't function, quite honestly. In those severe cases, you need to do a digital detox, usually get professional treatment to be able to help them kind of navigate back towards normalized living. But if your young kid, child, or teenager is falling a little bit too far but isn't that severe, we have to try to get back to creating some moderation and make the real world engaging for our kids again. And sometimes it's tricking our kids with backdoor nature experiences. You know, I'll have parents tell me, how do I do a digital detox for a couple of weeks? We'll go camping for a week, you know, or if you can, sports is a great antidote for screen time. Sports and music and different activities in school. Unfortunately, those begin to fall by the wayside if the child becomes further and further down the rabbit hole of screen time.
Right. We'll come right back with Dr. Nicholas Carderas, and we'll discuss some of these solutions and how you can help your kid overcome screen addiction and take back your kids. Today's show is sponsored by Colby Academy. With more than 40 years of experience in Catholic home education, Colby Academy offers a blend of classical Catholic curriculum and the latest educational technology. More info at relevantradio.com/Colby.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
With me this hour has been Dr. Nicholas Carderas. He's the leading technology addiction expert in our nation, and we're talking about his work from his book, Glow Kids, has to do with taking back your kids after the hijacking of kids from technology and outright screen addiction. 10 out of 10 recommend. If you're a parent, you need to read this book. If you know a parent, you need to buy this book for them. You can find him at omegarecovery.org. We'll include a link on social media. We're wrapping up some of the solutions for helping to take back your kids. You've mentioned delay those technology items for kids. What do you say about video games? Is it an absolute no? Social media, if you could give just kind of a brief few guidelines for what to do here.
Well, 98% of kids play video games. I can say that my 14-year-old boys haven't, and I didn't know how that experiment would unfold. My wife and I did the best that we could to provide them with alternate experiences, as I mentioned before, sports and music and travel and reading. Reading is another big antidote.
Yes.
Also doing things as a family, they used to say that the antidote for substance addiction was having family dinner together every night as opposed to alone together, you know, people in their own separate rooms. So it's really leaning into the social cohesion of the family and activities for your young people. We try to do one tech-free day a week where none of us are on our devices, so we try to model that as well. So we try to do things collectively together as a family that
love that.
Aligned. If, you know, there are some people that can handle gaming moderately, and there are other young kids that can't. It's a little bit of Russian roulette because it's hard to predict who's going to fall down that rabbit hole. It's a little bit of like any other kind of addictive disorder. You know, several people may try alcohol or smoke pot, and it's hard to tell sometimes who's going to be the one out of 10 that's going to develop a more significant issue with it. So I would say to parents, if you're dipping your toe in the water with things like gaming, you have to really watch how it's affecting your child. Are they getting very dysregulated with the nuclear temper tantrums when the device gets taken away? Are the other activities in their lives falling by the wayside? If those things are beginning to happen, that's when it's time to pull back or cut back. But it's a very individual thing. There's no set prescription across the board, 2 hours of screen time, 4 hours or 3 hours. It's really individual based on your child's own way of interacting with screen time.
Well, we are going to have to dive into more solutions and have you back again soon, because the crisis of technology addiction and bad habits with technology is not going anywhere. You can find Dr. Carderas at OmegaRecovery.org. That's OmegaRecovery.org. And please pick up his book, Glow Kids. We've included links to it on social media. Dr. Carderas, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today and for all you're doing to fight for our kids and the kids of the future to take them back from the crisis we face today of suicidality, anxiety, depression, and so many of the crises we're seeing well into adulthood surrounding bad habits with technology use that have turned to addiction. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. During our weekly marriage hour, we're going to unpack the topic of in-law relationships as we keep receiving questions on this. We'll take this back up tomorrow, but right now we have Joe calling from New Mexico, and he's getting ready to be married in just a handful of days, but he's having some doubts. So Joe, welcome to Trending. Please share your thoughts. We'd love to help you as much as we're able.
Hi. I am going to be getting married in a couple of days. We haven't been engaged too long, but in that time frame, we have had issues. Even in the time frame before that, since we've been engaged, she has called off the wedding a couple of times. Unfortunately, I feel like anytime that any issues come up, well, I try to talk about them so we can work them out and obviously be able to build a good relationship to actually move forward on our marriage. But anytime I do try to bring up something to try to talk about it, she and so completely calling it off, or just kind of like shuts me down or starts calling me names rather than trying to work the things out. And it's just kind of scary to try to go into something like that. And it's kind of making me, I guess, kind of have cold feet, but I think I'm in the right way of feeling that way. And I guess I just wanted to see if you got any advice for me.
Yeah, I think that, you know, every wedding comes with nerves often for the groom and usually some intense feelings and emotion for the bride. That's normal, but this does sound a little bit more or a lot more potentially than that. And with a marriage being just a few days away, Joe, and know that we will be praying for you, and I hope anyone listening right now will pray for you as well, that there's nothing wrong with delaying. If there are serious doubts, especially as grand as you've shared in the few minutes you've been with us, surrounding everything from trust and anger and lack of ability to cooperate and communicate properly and overcome, you know, even childish behavior such as name calling before marriage, those sound like pretty big red flags. And again, it's better to delay than get married and be in this crisis of regretting, or, you know, not being fully in this commitment that you've made. And, you know, as people of faith, as Catholics, when you marry, when you take those marital vows, you're coming freely, you're giving yourself totally, you commit to being faithful, and you commit to being fruitful with this person. And so I think some of the questions that might be wise to ask yourselves now, yourself right now, is, am I prepared, and is this person prepared to be a mother, a parent with me? Do I want to be a parent with this person with the way they're behaving now? Am I going to be faithful to this person? Will they be faithful to me? Am I giving myself totally, or do I have fear and, you know, resentment already building, or concern? And am I entering into this freely? It sounds like multiple of those areas, there may be large red flags. So kind of first thoughts, have you done any sort of marriage prep with your soon-to-be bride?
No, we have not actually.
So I highly recommend, are you Catholic?
Yes, but she's Christian.
Okay. Are you getting married in the Catholic Church?
We are not.
You're not. Okay, so lots more that could be said. And if you want to call back tomorrow, I am happy to have a longer conversation, but we have just a minute or two here. So I want to encourage you, as a baptized Catholic, You, as a baptized Catholic, are called to marry within the church. You have to marry as a Catholic within the church. Now, you can marry someone who's not Catholic. However, you do have to go through the proper steps to marry someone who's not Catholic. And if you marry in the church someone who's not Catholic, they're called to make the commitment to raise your children with you in cooperation in the faith. So it sounds to me, Joe, like a lot more things maybe need to be worked out. I would love to talk more with you about this. You're free to call back tomorrow here on Trending, and we can have a longer conversation. But there's a lot that can be done. You're Catholic. Why not bless that marriage when the day comes with the graces of the sacrament of matrimony? And I would encourage you not just to delay your marriage because it sounds like there are real red flags with your fiance, but because you're Catholic. And why not? Why wait for the graces to be bestowed upon you? Why wait to have that sacrament of matrimony before our Lord Jesus Christ? We're praying for you, Joe. I know people listening now are praying for you. Hang in there and call back tomorrow if you'd like to join us again. Have you known anyone who's chosen to have a pet over having a child? They maybe call themselves a pet mom. This is Timmery from Trending with Timmery. Friday, we're going to discuss the trends surrounding having kids, not having kids, or being afraid of having children. Maybe you have a family member or a friend who's afraid to have a kid. What do you say? What do you do? Join me daily at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.